This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Carrie Moon, a landscape and urban designer, co-founder of the People's Waterfront Coalition, and longtime advocate for creating a vibrant waterfront in Seattle. Carrie currently serves on the Central Waterfront Committee, which provides citizen oversight of the city's project to develop a new public waterfront. Carrie Moon is here today to tell us about and evaluate the plans for Seattle's waterfront. Welcome, Carrie.
Hi, thanks.
Would you begin by giving a brief historical perspective of how we came to the point of developing a new public waterfront in Seattle?
Sure. We'll do a quick rerun of history because it's kind of intriguing to me that even though Seattle started on the water, Seattle's always been a waterfront city. In the mid part of the 20th century, we probably turned our back on the waterfront because it was a place for industry, it was covered in rail tracks, development was happening in the suburbs, and people kind of quit thinking about it as part of our city, as a place for people, as a place for public life. And then when the earthquake happened in 2001, it became clear that the elevated highway, the viaduct, had to be torn down. And so the public debate started about what to do to replace the highway and what to do to redevelop the waterfront. And it was a great opportunity for the city to really reassess what to do with these 22 acres of publicly owned prime waterfront land right in the heart of downtown. And so I think, you know, we kind of had the argument about whether or not to replace the highway or what kind of highway to rebuild. That's all past us. And what we have now is 22 acres of land that is in city ownership, and the city gets to decide what to do with it. So we've been in this planning process for about a year and a half now.
What is the geographical area under consideration for waterfront development?
So it's right in the heart of downtown if you're from Seattle. It goes from about the ferry terminal, which is Pier 52, a little bit south of that actually, up through Pier 62, 63, which is where we used to have the wonderful concerts on the pier until they were closed down a few years ago, and up into Pike Place Market, and then following the path of the elevated highway, the viaduct, into Belltown. So it's kind of a Y-shaped piece of land, about 22 acres in total, right adjacent to downtown.
Would you say more about the opportunities that open up when the viaduct is torn down?
Yeah, so what's interesting is that the city of Seattle sort of developed in a way that turned its back on this highway in the past 50 years because it's so loud and it's sort of been a blighting factor. So all the buildings next to it kind of faced the other direction, and it became this strip of land with the historic piers. People went to visit the historic piers, but there was this no man's land between downtown and the waterfront. So when you remove that, it's like a scar that now you get to heal over. And so figuring out how to do that has been really intriguing because you have to create new east-west connections to get people from downtown to the water's edge. You have to create a new street because we're tearing out the old street and the viaduct, so there'll have to be a surface street in its place, but it can be pretty narrow and all the way east. So then you can leave a pretty big section of land on the water side. And this project also includes replacing the seawall. As you probably have heard, the seawall is both worn out and decayed, and it's become structurally unsafe. And so it's time to replace it with something that's seismically sound and sturdy enough to last for the next 100 years. So that has always been part of this project too. Although it's invisible and it's infrastructure and foundation, it's not quite as sexy as the public space on top, but it's definitely the first step and a crucial first step for this. So what you end up having is a new seawall, a new street that replaces the current Alaskan Way, a lot of east-west connections, and a lot of new public spaces, so parks, paths, and new piers.
How is the project to create a new waterfront, or Waterfront Seattle as it's called, set up? How is it organized?
It's intriguing. It's sort of what I like to say, Seattle process at its most constructive. Seattle has a kind of a culture of lots of public involvement and lots of public debate. And so we set this up so that there is the city doing the main part of the work. It's their land and they need to keep ownership of it on behalf of the citizens of Seattle. But then there's the design team, which we hired a fantastic design team to help us with the planning and the design work. And then there's a citizens oversight committee, which has been really active and robust. I think if you count all the subcommittee meetings, we've met over 100 times in the past year and a half. So this group has been sort of helping the city be a good client and guiding the project so that the design works and the funding strategy works and the long-term plans for maintaining and taking care of it work. And so different citizens, there's 40, I think, total on the committee, have been working really hard at all of those different segments of, you know, making this project happen. And it's been really intriguing because, you know, we're kind of working closely with politicians and city staff and working with the public and working with the design team. And so I feel like it's been a really successful and effective dialogue.
I understand there was a lot of public outreach during the process of doing the planning. So what did you hear from the public about what they want in a waterfront?
That was intriguing because I've never seen kind of more constructive public outreach ever in my history in Seattle. Because people have been, we've been arguing about this question since 2001. So there's a lot of people with very evolved ideas and expectations, and they came to the meetings. And so a few of the things we heard from the public were, don't just plan this for the 75-degree day in July. We need this to work all times of day and night, in all seasons, in all weather. So we added more kind of coverage to protect people from the rain than had been there at the beginning. Another thing we heard was, you know, people want to make sure we replace the democratic view of the viaduct, which has been fascinating. It's one of the reasons people love the viaduct, is that brilliant million-dollar view that you get for free when you're driving. And so how to do that well in a way that's free and open and welcoming to the public, we had to get that right, and the public had a lot of say about that. And then, frankly, there's a lot of debate about the street. This is a really muscular street. It's got to do a lot of work for access to the piers, for east-west connections, for freight trips that are local and serving downtown, for bicyclists, for the hordes of pedestrians that are going to be there. It's going to be really heavily used by different interest groups. And so they were very vocal, and they expressed what they needed to have happen to make it work for what they're caring about. And then I think finally the other intriguing thing was, how do we make this authentic to Seattle? And that was one of my favorite questions, because it sort of gets at what is the personality of Seattle and what's important to us and what are our values and how do we make sure that this place says, yes, this is about Seattle when it's done. And so the key issues that emerged were, it's got to be welcoming to everybody. It can't just feel like it's for somebody else. It's got to be open to everybody who has $5 to spend on hot dog and a lemonade, or $50 to spend on cocktails. It's got to feel welcoming to both families, tourists, people who work downtown, people coming in from the neighborhoods. And it's got to really be about the water, because Seattle's a water city. And so it has to be authentic about how we connect to the water, how we understand the water, how we see the tides moving. Can we touch the water? All those questions about how do you really reconnect a city to its water became essential to the authentic question.
What did the public say they didn't want in a waterfront?
They didn't want private development. This is in public ownership, and it's staying in public ownership, and it's for the public. And I think that was something we never varied from that. We never questioned, well, if we sold off a little bit of land, we never even went there. It's like, this has to be for the public. Another thing they didn't want is they didn't want the street to take over the whole space. And I think we carefully negotiated a narrow footprint that does the work it needs to do for the street. And they don't want it to feel like a shopping mall. They want it to feel welcoming and open for everybody, not like a place just for shopping or a place just for a certain activity. They wanted it to have enough unplanned available space so you can figure out what you want to do yourself, as well as enough programmed space, which is, you know, activities and recreation and things that inspire you. Oh, look, I'm going to go do that. So it was sort of the right mix of openness and program space. I think those are all the kind of things that people were kind of concerned about.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Carrie Moon, co-founder of the People's Waterfront Coalition and member of the Central Waterfront Committee, which provides citizen oversight of the city's project to develop a new public waterfront. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. The concept design and framework plan for Seattle's Central Waterfront was published in July. Before we go into more detail, what are your thoughts on the plan overall?
I would say it's fantastic. As someone who's worked on how to kind of make the most of this opportunity for 6 years now, we laid out a set of principles and goals early on that we've been advocating for. And what amazed me with this planning process is that they sort of used that as a starting point and then went way beyond it. And so it's more vivid and richer and interesting than any of us imagined, I think, 5 years ago when we started this. So I think it's a really big success.
What will the transportation infrastructure look like according to the plan? You've alluded to that already, but...
All along, the commitment's been to a four-lane street and kind of using First Avenue downtown as the model. So it's a busy street with a lot of activity by pedestrians, but pretty good traffic volumes because it has to carry some of the load of people moving north-south through Seattle. So it's generally four lanes through the main part of it, and with serious bike infrastructure on both sides and really generous pedestrian infrastructure on both sides, because we are expecting a lot of bikers and a lot of pedestrians. But at the south end, the road has to get bigger, more lanes. It's probably going to be shocking to some people, but because all the transit coming from West Seattle will have to use this street, because all the ferry traffic coming and going to the ferry dock will have to use this street, it ends up being fairly wide at the south end, and we're trying to make sure it works for all those users with the minimal footprint, but it's hard to balance all the needs. So at the south end, it's pretty wide, but it does the job. And through the main part of the waterfront, it's a narrow four-lane street with great pedestrian and bike facilities on either side.
Would you say more about the bicycle lanes?
The bike stuff isn't totally figured out. What the city initially proposed was a bike lane on the water side, so a two-way separate bike lane. And then we realized there was a problem with getting loading access to the piers, and we'd have to break that bike lane too many times to do it that way. So now they're kind of re-asking that question of what's the right way to do loading for the piers in a way that doesn't interfere with bikes. And we have a plan that's kind of under the microscope right now, and it might get changed.
How will this work for freight mobility?
Because local freight delivery will need to use the street, and freight trucks going between south of downtown and Ballard Inner Bay Industrial Area will need to use the street, it's got to be wide enough for freight. So they're going to be really careful about signal timing and making sure the grade up the hill isn't too steep. So they're doing those things to make sure it works for trucks and making sure the trucks can get around all the intersections. But otherwise, it'll feel like an urban street that just happens to work well for trucks. And just so people who live in Seattle understand, the route of this new street goes in the footprint of the viaduct. So it goes, instead of on the water by Pike Place Market, it goes up the hill and connects to Elliott and Western just north of Pike Place Market.
What kind of transit service is planned for the waterfront?
So they're looking at creating a transit hub near the ferry terminal, recognizing that a bulk of the people on the ferries are pedestrians, and a lot of them are using transit to go beyond downtown. So they're figuring out how to have a lot of buses stop within a block of the ferry terminal, so that becomes more of a transit hub there. So that's the question for how to get people from West Seattle through downtown to different destinations, how to get people from the ferry to different destinations. And then there's a second question of all these hordes of people we're imagining coming to the waterfront. How do we help them move around the waterfront? People might not want to walk the mile and a half. So we're looking at different techniques for how to help people move within the waterfront area. And that's not fully resolved yet, but there's a lot of things being considered, from more bike cabs to, you know, bikes that you can use along the waterfront, to smaller trucks, smaller transit buses that you can use to go back and forth between destinations, even looking at water taxis. There's sort of a whole range of things being considered for the local circulation around the waterfront, as well as, you know, there's this question of what do we do with a historic streetcar? For about 20 years, we had a streetcar in the waterfront, and it had to go away when the sculpture park was built because they had to move the barn and we didn't get the barn replaced. So that question is still live. And what they're considering is, you know, can we reuse those historic cars on the waterfront, but maybe on different infrastructure, because we can't use the raised platform with the current design. So either we could take the historic car and put it on a modern streetcar base, or possibly on rubber tires. Or if people really care about keeping those cars intact, and maybe we could consider using them somewhere else. So there's a lot of questions that aren't answered yet about the streetcar, and the city's furiously studying that because it's emerged as kind of a key question for a lot of people.
Would you go into more detail about plans for connecting the city with its waterfront?
Yeah, so with this stretch of waterfront land, it's important to make all the pieces fit together first. So that's sort of why we did this concept plan. We have to make sure the seawall and the street and the public spaces and the east-west connections all work together. And we're not going to build it all at once. It'll be built in several different individual projects over the next 6 years, starting with the seawall. But kind of the big picture plan for how it will be in 6, 7, 8 years when the whole thing's done is a really amazing commitment to creating public life downtown. And so starting at the south end, south of the ferry terminal, there's a pier called Pier 48 that's condemned. They're using it right now for construction staging, but eventually it will be torn down. And so that area can have a big, significant beach. And that's one of the most exciting things for me because, you know, we're on the water, but there's no place to touch the water until you go up to the sculpture park. And so this will create a place to kind of stand on the beach and watch the mountains, watch the container ships go, watch the ferries coming and going, throw rocks in the water, you know, do the things you do on the beach right in the middle of downtown. So that's one of the most exciting parts. And it also is kind of the biggest commitment to helping restore some intertidal habitat in Elliott Bay. That's one of the key issues towards restoring Puget Sound is to create more intertidal habitat. And this is one of the places you can do it where the water is shallow enough and the bathymetry is gentle enough that you can actually create a beach that will sustain itself, that will sort of stay in place and not get scoured away. So that's at the south end, and that's right next to Pioneer Square. So the Pioneer Square will have this amazing beach that will include their historic Washington Street boat landing, that little very old green building that's been on the waterfront forever. That will be restored as part of the beach project. And then through the historic pier section, there'll be a series of small public plazas between the piers, and those will be big enough to have seating, to have a kiosk, that maybe is selling coffee or, you know, renting bikes or something, and a place for small gatherings, festivals or events, or even just a busker. But it'll be a great place to sit and watch the water, watch what's going on between the piers with the tour boats coming and going and the sailboats and that. Then when you get to Union Street, there'll be an escalator that goes up to First Avenue because that's where the bluff starts to get really steep. And so there'll be connection to First Avenue there, and there'll be a big public plaza at the foot of Union Street, which is one of the other beautiful places on the waterfront. It'll have a big water feature that's right now planned to be the kind of water feature that can be jets shooting up out of the water for kids to play in on hot days or dry if we want to have an event like a farmer's market or a concert or a festival there. And also have other conditions that are possible, like a mist cloud for kind of an atmospheric, beautiful artwork, and with interesting lighting in it. So it'll be kind of this beautiful, modern, atmospheric place on the waterfront. And also just, you know, a broad, generous place to sit and look at the water and look at the mountains and enjoy the sunset. Then the next area going north is sort of adjacent to the aquarium, Pier 6263, which is a big empty concert pier, and Pike Place Market. And this is the most significant public space. And so the pier will stay relatively empty. It'll have a roller rink on it and the infrastructure that will allow concerts to happen there. But it'll be kind of empty and unprogrammed most of the day the way it is now, which I love because it's the one place you can go out and be alone near nature in the city. But the idea is to also have a way to float up a swimming barge. So in the summer months when people want to swim outside, you can go to that pier and have a swim, which I think will be fantastic and fun. Then as you go up Pike Place Market, there'll be a big, generous stair that goes all the way up to the market. So it'll sort of be like the Spanish Steps or the hundreds of other examples of big urban stairs for sitting on and watching the world go by. And this will be integrated into a new building for Pike Place Market on Western Avenue, which I think will be a great kind of addition to the market. It'll have more spaces for farmers, outdoor stalls for farmers, like a farmer's market to accent what's going on inside the market, as well as a lot of space that they need for other back of house stuff. It's the market's redevelopment and expansion plan. So there'll be a front porch public space connecting to this new building on the PC1 site, it's called. And what's intriguing about that part is it's called the Overlook Walk. And it's the key place where we're replacing the democratic view of the viaduct, as I mentioned earlier. And it's the key place for recreation and programming. So there'll be children's play features, play structures. There'll be places for picnicking. When you get food at the market, you want to have a place to sit down and watch the sunset or watch what's going on the waterfront and eat your picnic. So it'll be really kind of the center of the new public life of the waterfront. We'll be really focused here. And it's also the most essential east-west connection, because right now, if you've ever spent much time downtown, you probably have answered the question 3, 4, 5, 10 times a day. People on the waterfront saying, how do you get to Pike Place Market? Or people in Pike Place Market saying, how do you get to the waterfront? And this will be the answer. This will be the big, visible, beautiful, dramatic east-west connection between the aquarium and the waterfront and Pike Place Market.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Carrie Moon, co-founder of the People's Waterfront Coalition and member of the Central Waterfront Committee, which provides citizen oversight of the city's project to develop a new public waterfront in Seattle. You mentioned a bit about this earlier, but would you say more about plans for ecological restoration along the waterfront?
Yeah, what's interesting about that is that the piers are at that angle because the water's so deep. And so while we would like to be able to create more intertidal habitat and a better place for salmon migration, we're pretty limited by how deep the water is and how steep the drop-off is. But there are a few places where you can restore intertidal habitat. So on either side of the aquarium, the water is shallow enough to do something. So we're looking at doing some underwater construction of a habitat bench, which is basically creating the natural condition of what's happening underwater in Puget Sound beaches so that you can grow the eelgrass and the other plants that like to grow under there that then all the intertidal critters like to feed on and use for habitat and protection from predators. So we're doing as much of that as we can, but there's really only three places where you can do much, which is the beach at the south end and either side of the aquarium. But the whole length of the waterfront, they're being really careful to do salmon migration route assistance. So a lot of salmon coming out of the Duwamish come along the central waterfront. And right now it's pretty harsh because there's no protection from predators. The salmon like to be in shallow water and they like to have plants to hide from their predators. And they like to have daylight so they can keep track of where they are and see what's happening because their eyes don't adjust like human eyes do. And so what we're doing there is creating as much light along the edge as we can. So there's daylight coming down through the pier connections so that they can have light and see where the edge is, as well as doing what we can to create shallow habitat, depending on wherever the tide is. So this could be something like a series of almost shelves hanging from the seawall so that wherever the tide is, there's some place that's fairly shallow for the migrating salmon to be in. So there's a lot of science about how to help the salmon and how to create intertidal habitat, and we're trying to do as much as we can here within reason, given the conditions and the cost. So that's what's happening in the water side. And then throughout the whole upland side, we're really trying to look at how do natural Puget Sound beaches work in terms of the upland intertidal and marine ecology, and what plants and what animals work to sustain each other. And so a lot of the plants that we pick will be plants that will kind of assist with that whole ecological cycle, as well as how do we deal with the water. We're trying to figure out how to do stormwater management and rainwater management locally on site in a way that mimics the natural processes. So what we're trying to do is, as much as we can, given that it's mostly urban and a lot of street and a lot of hardscape, what can we do to mimic sort of the bigger ecological processes that need to happen in an intertidal zone.
How much is this going to cost?
If you combine the seawall, which I think in most people's minds, it's all the same thing, so let's combine the seawall with this. The street is paid for by WashDOT, and the seawall we're doing at a public vote this November, so the public will get a chance to vote on the seawall. So with those two sources, it's 60% paid for already. So that's the good news. The total price tag, including the seawall and the street, is about $1 billion. But what's fascinating about this project is often in Seattle, we make a big plan and then we say, well, that's going to be hard to fund. Let's put the plan aside until we figure out the funding. We did not do that this time. We figured out how to fund it, how to build it, and what to build all together at the same time. So the total price tag is already figured out. So the seawall, $290 million, if the public votes yes in November, and I would urge everyone, yes vote in November on the seawall, $290 million from WashDOT to replace the street and tear down the viaduct. Then there'll be a big chunk, about $200 million to $300 million, that will be paid for by downtown property owners, which I think is something that will make a lot of people happy, because those who benefit from this public investment should pony up and help pay for it. And it's still a couple years away before we have the vote, but things are sort of gearing up for a good positive vote there. And then there's roughly $100 million plus or minus planned for philanthropy, that there's a lot of people in Seattle who want to give back to the city, who care about having great public life, great civic life, and want to help make it happen. So there's a pretty generous expectation for philanthropy. So once you get all those sources together, that's about 90% of the project, with a pretty good chance the money will come. And so that leaves the last chunk of money, maybe $100 million for the future, and we haven't figured out yet. Maybe there'll be a public vote on a big park levy in 2, 3, 4 years. It's not really clear where that money will come from, but if we have 90% of the money in hand, it'll be a lot easier to figure out then how to get the rest of it.
So what is the upcoming timeline, and how does the development of the waterfront relate to tearing down the viaduct and when the tunnel is completed and all those other things that are going on?
It is such a puzzle. If anybody's done project management and critical path analysis, holy cow, this is really complex. But the plan is to take the viaduct down in 2016. We have to have the seawall done before then. So the public vote in November is really important, because if the public votes yes and we get the money right away, we can stay on track. So build the seawall first, then tear down the viaduct, and then after that's done and the tunnel's open, then we can build all the public spaces starting in about 2016 to 2018. So it's very carefully sequenced for what needs to happen when. And remember, there are businesses down there in the waterfront, so we have to keep access and keep that street open continuously this whole time.
What are the upcoming next steps? What will be happening, say, over the next year?
Over the next year, we will have a public vote on the seawall in November, and we will continue the design work. Kind of what we did in the concept plan was we arranged all the big puzzle pieces so that we know how they all work. But there's some additional detail that needs to be developed so that when we rebuild the seawall, we're doing everything right on the water side. We don't want to be in a situation where we build something and then have to tear it out and rebuild it. So we have to do more detailed design work around what will go above the seawall, basically. So that's happening next. And then there'll be kind of more detailed design on the street, because we want to be ready and have everything ready to build immediately when the viaduct comes down. So there'll be more detailed design work, and especially the seawall vote and seawall construction will happen in the next year.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
You know, it's not very often that a city gets a chance to redefine its very heart, and this has been sort of a remarkable example of Seattle citizens contributing their very best thinking about what they want the future of downtown to be. And even if you don't live downtown or don't feel like you come downtown very often, it's still a really significant project, because it will represent Seattle's commitment to, you know, green urbanism, sustainable design, doing right by nature as we kind of develop the heart of our city, and creating this culture of public life. I feel like, you know, certain neighborhoods have it. If you go to Pike Pine neighborhood, you have Cal Anderson Park and the great retail and restaurants and cafes and coffee shops and bars and music on Pike and Pine streets. And there's this amazing synergy between the public park and what's happening with the, you know, kind of social life. And we have a chance to do something that interesting downtown. And I think that's kind of essential, and it'll really define what Seattle's about for the future.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Carrie.
Thank you.
You have just been listening to Carrie Moon, co-founder of the People's Waterfront Coalition and member of the Central Waterfront Committee, which provides citizen oversight of the city's project to develop a new public waterfront in Seattle. For more information, check on the web at waterfrontseattle.org. Again, that's waterfrontseattle.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.